That's a great question.
Here I am as Miss Kentucky, competed in Miss America, and it's been really an amazing journey.
So in Lexington in particular, we mostly resettle Congolese, and we have the largest population of Congolese within Kentucky.
And he said to me, science is cool, learning is fun. That's what we do.
All the schools in Kentucky presenting a Power Word presentation, which talks about verbal bullying, negative perceptions in hip-hop, how to challenge our peers when they use negative words. At the end of the day, words do matter, and it's a catalyst for action.
That's a great question. That's a powerful question. That's a question that I hope that all of us will continue to ponder on.
We'll be getting back out to playing live, but some places that I do like playing here in Lexington.
I tend to focus on local issues, local people, you know, local being Kentucky.
So we've got these various battles raging between the Attorney General and the governor, and in the background is the former governor.
This is a myth that is really common.
Mountain Dew is not a contraceptive.
Probably is going to cause a pretty bad yeast infection.
An extreme yeast infection.
If you can't deep fry it, spray paint in gold.
Now, will the animal send you like a postcard as a thank you with a little paw print on it?
Who's at fault more, men or women?
The vetting process. Did you already ask that? Okay.
It works.
Hey everybody, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM Lexington Community Radio, coming to you live from a slightly soggy north side of Lexington, Kentucky, at the beautiful 100 plus year old Johnson.
Yeah, but it's a dry soggy.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
It's not too bad.
I like it.
It's not raining now.
No.
But nonetheless, I'm Chuck.
I'm Ben.
And we're here with you, as we are every Friday from noon to 2 p.m., bringing Bluegrass Bios to you. Just in case you didn't hear, the night market for tonight is canceled. But it will be happening next week. Don't lose your excitement. just keep it in.
Keep it going.
For 1 week. But nonetheless, in the studio, we have a special guest with us this week. Would you like to introduce yourself?
My name is Guy Mendes.
Nice. And thank you very much, Guy, for coming in. Let me tell people a little bit about Guy. He's a Kentucky photographer. His work has appeared in Newsweek, the Smithsonian, Playboy, Mother Jones, Garden and Gun, New York Times, and many other publications. You've published a few books. Exactly. Garden and Gun.
Yeah, listen, that's big.
So you've published a few books, Local Light, an anthology of 100 years of photographs made in Kentucky, Light at Hand, a monograph of 45 photographs, both by Noman Press. Shout out to Gurney Norman. 4040, 40 years and 40 portraits, and Institute 193's used your photo for Ben Soleil and Daniel Martin Moore's album Dear Companion.
Well, that was Sub Pop Records, but the Institute 193 published the 4040 book.
Oh, got you.
And traveled the show around.
I see.
Thanks to Philip Jones.
Yeah, shout out to Institute 193, who had an opening last night as well.
That's right.
An event, which is great.
A show of Bob Tharzing's Painted Clothing.
Nice. Did you go check that show?
I had an election camera club meeting, but I'm going to get down there today.
Yeah, I'm going to try to as well.
Hi, Maya.
Excellent. Yeah, Maya and Paul doing it upright as an anchor of local art here in Lexington. So, Guy, first of all, I want to start off just asking you, first of all, where were you born?
I was born and raised in New Orleans, Louisiana.
New Orleans, huh? Mm-hmm. Great. And how did you end up in Kentucky?
My parents had lived here before I was born, mm-hmm. For just a couple of years. They were New Orleanians, but my father was a map maker for Standard Oil, and they sent him up here in 1946 and 47. And they moved back in turn of the year in 48, and then I was born in New Orleans. And,
that's interesting. How come they sent him up here?
They were looking for oil. And
in Kentucky?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool. I didn't even realize they did that.
They didn't find much.
Yeah. I think there's still people.
There's still people out there looking for oil, yeah.
And still not finding much.
So I was born and raised in New Orleans, and it was a great place to be raised, except that it was totally segregated in coming up in my youth. And I lived near Tulane and kind of wished I could have gone there, but I couldn't have afforded that. And I didn't want to go to LSU because they shaved your head and made you take ROTC. So it suddenly occurred to me that I could go to Kentucky, and because my parents had friends up here, and I'd visited here as a child once, I think. And I had an ashtray in my room that was the shape of Kentucky. And
nice.
I was a kid, I didn't smoke, but I had this ashtray that, with a cardinal on it, you know. And
so Kentucky was calling?
I guess.
Yeah.
And I liked basketball.
Yeah, that always helps too.
So
when did you come up for college at UK?
I came up 50 years ago, the fall of 66. It's really crazy.
That's great. And so where did you go to high school down in Louisiana?
I went to Fortier High School, uptown New Orleans. I think it's now another kind of school. It has a different name. But and, you know, I came here just thinking I'd be a journalist and started working for the Kentucky Colonel. Mm. That was really a good experience. It was pretty liberal or radical paper back then, as it's becoming again, it seems.
Shout out of necessity.
Yeah, shout out to them. I had some great teachers, and I met some great friends, and 50 years later, I'm still here.
Well, that's awesome. Were you taking photographs for the Colonel?
Some, but I was writing more for the Colonel. I've taken photographs since I was a kid. I had a Brownie and a couple of different Polaroids. Mm-hmm. And then when I worked on the high school paper, Silver and Blue, we were the fighting tarpons, if you know what a tarpon is.
I don't
know.
It's a big silver fish in the Gulf of Mexico. I took some pictures for the, you know, student publication, and did some around the house of my feet and my cat and stuff. But not till I got to college and took a class or two that I start to get more interested. And then a professor I had introduced me to a photographer that changed the way I thought about photography. And so here.
Who was that?
That was Gene Meatyard, mm-hmm. Ralph Eugene Meatyard.
Mm-hmm. Who was the professor? Was Wendell Berry.
Yeah, correct? He was.
Excellent.
And it was a wonderful, you know, thing for me to meet and get to know both of those people and their families and all the people in their circles and orbits, and that's how I got to know Ed McClanahan and Gurney Norman and Bobby Ann Mason and James Baker Hall and Guy Davenport, and then Jonathan Williams was coming from North Carolina to visit all these people, and he was a poet and publisher of the Jargon Society books, and he was an artist like a few others I've known, like Ann Tower, Philip Jones, artists who seek out other artists and bring their work to light, exhibiting, publishing. And Jonathan Williams used to come here and take Gene Meatyard and Davenport to go see Tom Merton at the Monastery at Gethsemane, and where they'd meet with Wendell and Tonya Berry, you know, and so forth and so on. And it's like quite a crowd to fall into. So, you know, it was fortunate for anybody that, you know, knew those people and continues to know them, fortunately.
Yeah, and I think fortunate also for the audience, anyone who gets to touch their work and see that and experience that amazing convergence of Kentucky artists that just happened to come together at that period of time.
Well, it's an amazing flowering of various kinds of things that one might not expect. I was in the show in Cincinnati last fall of the old Lexington Camera Club, mm-hmm. and the show was from the period of the 50s through the early 70s when it died out. And there was a nice catalog. Yale University Press did the catalog, mm-hmm. and there was talk in the catalog about this flowering of photography in an unlikely place, mm-hmm. in an unlikely time. And and at the same time, there was this incredible literary, you know, scene going on, mm-hmm. from the early 60s on up, you know, to now. And so it's easy to look around and get inspired by one kind of artist or another.
And I noticed when with that exhibit, I went and checked that out, which is it was an awesome show that the Cincinnati Art Museum did. Mm-hmm. And I think it was amazing because when you first walked in, the first thing you see are all of the different people who have took portraits of everyone else. And so you could see there was that synergy happening amongst artists.
Well, there was a method to the madness of, you know, traveling out into the hinterlands, you know, several people in a car, and then you get out and you start taking pictures, and you inevitably take pictures of each other.
Yeah.
Or someone will say, "Hey, stand over here," and you go stand over there, and then you can say, "Hey, stand over here."
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of them are just dumb, but some of them are, you know, suddenly, you know, when seen by the right person through the right lens, it's suddenly something different.
Certainly,
and
when the light hits
not just Joe Blow standing there, it's some figure in a strange place.
Excellent.
Uh-huh. That's
awesome. What do you think provided sort of the spark for that kind of outburst of creativity at the time?
You know, and photographically, I think it goes back to Van Deren Koch, who the Camera Club existed from the 34 or something, and there was some professors and business people, and mostly men. There were some women from time to time through the years, and I was only involved in the last, you know, 5 years, 67 to 72 or so. But a lot of the early work was pictorial and romantic and view camera work, beautiful work. And then Van Koch, I think, had got an inkling of the larger world outside and knew what was happening in photography. And they brought Ansel Adams in for a workshop. Mm-hmm. Another time they went to Indiana University, and Henry Holmes Smith, the professor there, had a several-week workshop, and Minor White from MIT would come to that and talk about Zen, and that's how Gene Meatyard got interested in Zen.
Wow. That's awesome.
And so I think Van Koch kind of started... expanded the way the people in the camera club looked at the world, and experimentation became more the order of the day, and pushing, you know, the envelope in four corners and black and white, and I swear when the first time I saw some of Gene Meatyard's work, I just didn't know what to think. They were as unlike any other photographs I'd ever seen. They weren't about the real world. They trafficked in metaphor and mystery and strangeness. And who knew things could be that strange around here?
Certainly, yeah. I think his work is really bittersweet. That's what I love about it. Is it's a little dark.
It can
dark,
be very
but
funny, but it can also be very dark.
Absolutely, yeah. So, Guy, I wanted to ask you, who gave you your first camera?
Oh, I guess my parents.
So, do you remember what kind of camera it was?
Yeah, it was a Brownie.
It was a Brownie.
You know, it's made 6 or 8 pictures on a roll, and, you know, you sent them off and got them back or from the drugstore. And, you know, you made a bunch of crappy pictures.
Yeah, but one was good.
Little white borders, crinkle cut, you know.
Nice. So now what kind of
camera? Pictures of my dogs and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Nice. What kind of cameras do you like to shoot with now?
Brownies.
Brownies. That's great.
I wish. Now I shoot with a couple of different kinds that I've used for a long time, and a 35mm camera, and a 2 1/4 film camera, and a 2 1/4 square camera, and a 4x5 a view camera that makes, you know, sheet film one shot at a time. All of which are labor intensive, but yield wonderful results. And then I have a really nice digital camera that, you know, things move faster in the digital realm. It's a different kind of chore to deal with. You know, you shoot more because you can, and then you have more to look at, and your eyes blur, and you scroll through, and hopefully you don't miss what we're seeking. But
How do you decide if you want to shoot analog or digital? When you're shooting a subject,
I usually shoot both, and I have a little contest with myself to see which camera is going to win.
Nice. That's
which,
great.
Which camera usually wins?
You know, it's different. Sometimes the view camera wins because if the thing isn't moving, or if you don't want it to be moving, if the thing's moving, the digital 35 millimeter is, you know, in your hands, and, you know, it's not quite action photo, but, you know, you can respond more quickly. So sometimes the 35 millimeter digital wins. Sometimes the black and white, medium format wins because you're making portraits of someone, and that's a nice format for portraits. And
you think film works better for portrait, and maybe digital works better for landscape or city?
I don't like to make rules. Yeah, I'd say any kind of camera can make any kind of picture, you know, from the one in your pocket to, it's just a matter of how big you want to make it and how much wonderful and beautiful tonal detail you want to get in it.
Have you gotten into any of the software?
I use Lightroom, and I have some friends who are teaching me a little bit about Photoshop. So I don't, you know, care how people manifest their pictures. I'm interested in the final result.
Gotcha. And absolutely.
Then if it was okay, done by a certain kind of magic, you know, I want to know how it was done. But, you know, people are doing all kinds of things now. And in the new Lexington Camera Club, there are people that shoot negatives and then scan them and then put them in the digital realm to print them. And I've heard of photographers out in the wider world that shoot digital and then have negatives made so that the prints can be made from negatives.
Interesting.
And there's a richer tonality sometimes.
Well, you get a softer image, definitely. That's not quite so hard on your eyes and on your vision, I would think. Well, I think film would be easier, just from my own personal experience, just watching it is easier on my eyes than digital and stuff. It's like if you're looking at a video or something shot on film. And I've noticed that since all the movie theaters everywhere have converted from film projection to digital projection, that sometimes I'm coming out of the theater and I'm just rubbing my eyes. It's been a little hard on me, especially with the glasses and the glare and stuff like that. Who are some of the photographers today, either locally or nationally, that you kind of respect and admire? Whose work would you like to promote?
Well, goodness, I mean, I'm not in the business of promoting things, really, but, you know, I like a lot of the photographers in Lexington. There's some wonderful photographers here, and if I start to list them, I'm invariably going to leave some out.
Certainly.
But you all are out there. Hi. Love you. And, you know, there are people that are alive and working whose work I've loved for a long time. Emmett Gowan, Sally Mann, let's see, who else? There's some great photographers in Louisville. You know, there's this group of photographers who back in the 70s did a couple of years' work during the bicentennial year. The outcome was called Rough Road. It was Bill Burke, Bob Hauer, and Ted Wathen. And they traveled around Kentucky for 2 years in station wagons with their gear in the back and photographed all kinds of people and places, and it's an amazing book that just, there was a show at the Fraser Museum in Louisville a year or two ago, kind of brought the show back. But I hear they've reconstituted that project and are sending out photographers around Kentucky.
Oh, that's pretty interesting.
To start a kind of compendium of what do we look like nowadays.
Hopefully the roads are a little nicer this time around.
Well, yeah, I'm sure, and except, you know, for the crumbling bridges and so forth.
Yeah, exactly. Well, just in case you're joining us, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU. We're in here with Guy Mendez, and we're chatting about photography in Kentucky. Guy, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, you know, studying with Wendell and what UK was like back then. You know, what was it like studying with Wendell Berry, and what was UK or Lexington like when you first got here?
Oh, well, when I first got here, it seemed like pretty straight fraternity, sorority kind of place, and there were, you know, some elements of activism. There was maybe even I don't know if the Students for Democratic Society (SDS) had started yet or not. 66. I think there was beginning of the anti-war movement that I came into contact with through the Colonel. And then there was the Black Student Union. They were really the first activist on campus challenging Rupp's all-white teams, or UK's all, you know, all UK's all-white teams. It things heated up because of, you know, that strange, you know, in an institution of higher learning, you know, so, why do we have discrimination?
Yeah, right.
And questioning became more intense as the war increased in Vietnam, and we were all threatened more with being sent to Vietnam. And so there were more protests kind of, you know, 67, 68, there were a lot of protests. And
Did you get drafted?
No, I tried to get a CO, conscientious objector status, okay. And my board was in New Orleans, and they didn't do that sort of thing. Yeah. And I got my board shifted around for a while. It's a long story, but I got out on a during 69 and 70, I helped a core group of people put out an underground paper around here called the Blue Tail Fly. And before we left the Colonel, before we got kicked off the Colonel, we had caused a couple of student uprisings and whatnot. But so when I almost got inducted into the Army, I convinced an Army shrink that I was going to cause a lot of trouble in the Army. And, I don't know what happened then, but...
Yeah, I managed to do that when I turned 18, and they kept calling my house.
So, Guy, were you there when the ROTC building caught on fire?
Oh, people always say, did you burn that building? And I can say once more that, no, I did not. And I used to say I didn't know anyone who had anything to do with it, and that, you know... People say, the hippies burned the building. And I'd say, you know, no, we were for peace, love, and understanding, right. Man. It's not, we weren't burning buildings. And there was, at the time, this is after Kent State and Jackson State. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, my pocket's ringing.
No problem.
This was after the killings at Kent State and Jackson State. Mm-hmm. There was this fire, right, on campus of an old Quonset hut-like building that was housed Air Force ROTC and modern dance. And
natural combination.
And it was apparently heavily insured, and so that made us wonder down the road if, you know, the governor and the administration was involved in, you know, burning the building. But
interesting.
But during this period of protest, there was a guy that was proven to be, he was walking around offering people $5 to throw rocks through the window of Buell Armory, and he had a fishnet t-shirt, and he had slicked back hair, and no one had ever seen him before. Mm. Turned out he was an undercover cop from Florida, he was an agent provocateur trying to cause trouble. Mm. And
yeah, you heard a lot about that in the false flag operations, guys with just tie-dyed shirts but crew-cut haircuts, even some of, like, put-on wigs and bandanas.
It was insidious, and... But there was reason to feel paranoid, and there was reason to be worried about being sent to Vietnam. Mm. There was reason for fear that the environment was being destroyed because Kentucky was being stripped all to hell in both, you know, eastern and western Kentucky. So there was a lot to cause people to rise up and march in the streets. So it was a busy time and an interesting time, and there were some wins and some losses, you know.
And I'm sure being at the Colonel, you're right on the cusp of it all.
We were until we got kicked out.
Exactly. So how did you come to meet Wendell, and how did that relationship develop?
I was fortunate to hear him speak against the war in Vietnam, and asked him if I'd come to his farm and interview him, and that's when I went up there for the first time. I was 67, and also there that day was Gene Meatyard and his wife Madeline and their kids. And
so was that the first time you met Ralph?
Yeah. So that was Looking back, it was quite fortunate for me, and I was lucky to be there, you know, and to realize that I need to get with these people and take classes and apprentice myself however I could. UK had some wonderful teachers. I switched from journalism into English. Mm-hmm. I also heard Wendell speak at the first Earth Day in 1970, April 22nd, and he read an essay called Think Little that, you know, was a clarion call in opposition to Think Big. Mm. And he let us publish it in the Blue Tail Fly, so that was cool.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about the Blue Tail Fly? Can people find that anywhere?
Oh, yeah. Thanks to UK Special Collections. Love you all out there. They have carefully copied, digitally copied all 11 issues, probably 16 to 24 pages an issue, and you can get access to them online. And when you walk in Special Collections, on your right, there's a desk where you check in, and there's a giant portrait of Henry Clay, you know, a painting, mm-hmm. and then next to that is a giant blown-up front page of the Blue Tail Fly. I love it.
Two great compromisers.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think we probably differed on certain things.
Certainly.
But the Blue Tail Fly was an underground newspaper. It welled up after there were about six or eight of us that started it. And it, you know, was anti-war and pro-civil rights and pro-women, pro-environment, and we had some great writers, including Wendell and James Baker Hall, and Gene Meatyard gave us photographs, and there were 11 issues over 2 years. It was supposed to be a monthly, so we didn't quite. We got 11 issues done, and it cost us about $300 an issue, and they sold for 20 cents, and if you sold it, you got to keep a dime.
Nice.
And most people kept the whole 20 cents. And so it was kind of a skin of the teeth operation. And once we had a bleeding American flag, a silk screen on the cover, and we had been getting printed at the Georgetown News, but the head of the printing press there was this tough old guy, and he said, no, I'm not going to print that bleeding flag. And he pointed to a nude photograph inside. He said, I'll print dirt, but I'm not going to print filth. And so we had to change the cover, and then we had to find another printer. Hmm. And we had to go all the way into north central Indiana to find a printer who didn't ask us if we were going to use the F word.
Mm-hmm.
And this printer up in Indiana printed the Great Speckled Bird from Atlanta, which was one of the lead, you know, the best known underground papers, the Chicago Seed, which was another big one, and one or two others I can't remember. But the printer in Indiana told me that the Blue Tail Fly was the only one he read, and he liked the articles and so forth. But
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Ben, maybe we should take a little break here.
We can do that.
I do want to remind people that this month, as May, we're having a fundraiser here at Lexington Community Radio. We're having a Have Your Say in May fundraiser, and thank you very much for Guy for coming in as part of that to help us out, to help the station. So basically, if you go to lexingtoncommunityradio.org, or if you go to gofundme.com/LCRMay, please consider giving a donation to the station, since we run entirely on donations, underwriting, and grants. So help support your local community radio so that we can keep doing what we do. But nonetheless, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back here with Guy Mendez. We're having a chat, and you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU, Lexington Community Radio.
Are you looking for a way to help those less fortunate in our Lexington community? Compassion, appreciation, respect. gratitude. Experience all this and more when you join Serve in downtown Lexington each week for Wednesday Night Serve. We are a community giving back to our community, serving healthy meals to anyone in need every Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. in Phoenix Park. To learn more about the nonprofit organization Serve, visit the Serve Lex Facebook page or email servelexington@gmail.com. You can also call Serve at
502-565-7043.
Tune in to Urban Conversations
every Monday and Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. on 93.9 WLXU.
Come sit in the lounge with us. I'm your host, Janet.
And I'm your host, Future, where your voice matters.
Any questions?
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM Lexington Community Radio. And with us in the studio is Guy Mendez, and we're chatting about Kentucky, photography, Lexington, you know, the whole nine yards. So, Guy, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, well, really about the Lexington Camera Club. But first, I want to ask you about your time at KET, because I know you won a few Emmys with KET, correct?
A couple of regional Emmys, mm-hmm. and a couple of programs that were on the national PBS schedule about wonderful artists that I really enjoyed working on. George Wolfe, the producer, director, writer, and Barbara Kingsolver, the writer. Those were, and I worked on another program on Gene Ritchie that was really exciting and wonderful to work on with Gene when, you know, she was a dear and amazing talent. And one of the most interesting things I worked on, and something I thought that everybody, all white people, should know about, I worked on a program on the Underground Railroad. Mm-hmm. I spent a year or year and a half on that. And, you know, Kentucky was a breeding state. And tomorrow people will raise their glasses and sing My Old Kentucky Home, not knowing that the original title was Poor Old Uncle Tom Goodnight.
Wow.
It was a lament sung by a slave who'd been separated from his family and sold down the river. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we need to remember that to know it if we don't know it, and then to remember it, because Cheapside was a place of great destruction for the, you know, families and you know, the human race. So we need to know that and not forget it. And so working on that was eye-opening. And you know, going back to when I first came to UK almost 50 years ago, and one of my for the Colonel, one of my beats was for a while the Black Student Union, and for the first time in my life, I made black friends and people that inspired me and impressed me and loved me, and I loved them back. And wow, that was, you know, very eye-opening, and that's part of what college is supposed to do, right? So, and some of those people are still out fighting. You know, the beat goes on. We've got so much work to do. You know, you win a victory. It took us probably 10 years to stop the Vietnam War. It took us several years to stop two nuclear power plants on our borders, one near Cincinnati, one near Louisville. You know, there's still so much. And it took us years to stop the broad form deed from allowing corporations to tear up people's property because they own the mineral rights underneath, yeah, but
certainly, yeah, and that's what spawned KFTC, correct?
Right. So, and now we're faced with new challenges where their advances are being rolled back, and just the notion of, gee, we can we're going to change this regulation and let coal companies put waste into the streams again, no problem. Well, there are health studies that show that there are higher incidence of cancer and disease related to those metals and minerals that in eastern Kentucky and West Virginia. And so there's a lot of work to do.
Certainly, and I think there's a very heavy importance on local media, local resources to tell the story of our areas, what's really happening. And do you feel like at KET you were able kind of, well, I guess from the Colonel to KET, kind of to transition, but also carry on that mentality?
Well, I tried to get KET to do things on strip mining, but they always balked. It was because at the same time they were trying to get coal companies to give them money, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, I was just a cog in the wheel at KET. Mm-hmm. You know, there were probably 200 of us there at the height of employment there. And now, of course, KET and all of PBS is threatened by a cut of funding, as is NPR and the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Endowment for the Humanities. And, you know, the things make life worth living for.
Well, and it's that government funding that gets it out into poorer areas of the country. Like at PBS, I think they go a little over 12% of their funding comes from
probably
taxpayer money, and then the rest comes from contributions and underwriting. And it's that government funding that gets it out to the middle of nowhere in Kentucky. Lexington will probably be unaffected by it for the most part, in Louisville. It's getting it to the people who otherwise, you know, don't have exposure to a lot of these things. That's what the funding is for.
It cost everybody about $1.35 a year for public TV, I think.
Wow. Yeah.
So speaking of remote places, Guy, where are some of your favorite places to shoot in Kentucky?
You know, I like what Phyllis George Brown said once when she was campaigning, when her husband was running for governor, and she being from somewhere in Texas, got off a plane in northern Kentucky and said, "I love Kentucky. It's like a foreign country."
Yeah,
you know,
we are our own people.
You can,
no doubt about that.
You can drive for an hour or two and be in Paleolithic wonderland. Mm-hmm. You can go a half hour out of town and be in a gorge that is, you know, just priceless and precious and with endangered species. And but of course, there's a highway crew up the road. You know, with a map looking at the creek. You know,
right.
Marble Creek is one place I've gone to for 40 years because a dear friend lives out there. And
where is that at?
Marble Creek's in Jesmond County, and it runs to the Kentucky River.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not only does it have species that are endangered, it has a lot of history to it. There were freed slaves that lived in there and some cemeteries for their people. Their Boone and his family spent a year or two on Marble Creek. One of the daughters wrote about it later. And and it's also just this beautiful wild place. And there was a road that was proposed and is still proposed, a connector from Nicholasville to I-75 that had gone, one of the routes, one of four proposed routes, was right down Marble Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was, this was about two years ago, and there was a big hootenanny kind of thing where we raised money to pay some lawyers to help fight it. And we think Marble Creek's been taken off the list of the four routes, but you know, and this is a road that'll cost millions, and it's to get semi-trucks from Nicholasville to I-75 faster.
Not that they can't get there already, just a little faster.
Right. And of course, our landscape, the bluegrass landscape, is endangered. I mean, they're trying to expand the urban services boundaries. Now the developers always want more. And yet, what makes us so special is the agrarian landscape around us for raising horses and cattle and hogs and wheat and barley. And, you know, I love that West 6 has bought a farm and they're going to be producing their own grains and fruits.
Cool.
And,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's over somewhere in Franklin County, maybe, or next county over. They do great things, and that's one of them. And But there's so much to protect around here, and we have to keep working to protect it.
And I think about Eric Ries said, you know, if you want somebody to protect something, make them fall in love with it, show them it. And I think through your photographs and photographing those areas, you can show people, you know, how majestic and how amazing Marble Creek or these other Kentucky natural phenomena are without them having to hike out and see it.
Or put them in a convertible and drive them around.
Yeah, that helps.
Back roads.
Certainly.
But, you know, some of my photographs that I like, they're my favorites, I kind of feel are little hymns or prayers that places like this exist and that we can keep it existing and keep it from being destroyed, for future generations. We've inherited it, and we need to leave it in as good or better shape.
Well, I wanted to mention, while there's a little time left, that as part of the GoFundMe or May, what are we calling it? Have Your Say in May campaign. If you want to call in, if you have a question for Guy, our number is 859-721-5690. Or if you have a question for me or Chuck, we'll answer a question.
Yeah.
Any kind of question, really.
Probably not as interesting.
Why is the sky blue? Not today, but, you know.
Well, here's some reasons why. Here are some reasons why one would support Lexington Community Radio. There's a great show in the morning, The Kiss of Life.
Mm-hmm. Patrick Mitchell.
Right. Friday. And he's on air, 5 days a week?
Yeah.
Not just Friday.
Every day.
There's... Rona Robertson, Weta, and Chris Michaels' show, Hot Water Cornbread.
Mm-hmm. It's on Tuesdays at noon.
That's a must hear. There is Patrick McNeese's Voice Box show.
It's on Saturdays at 9.
There used to be, the Guide to Reva?
Yeah,
and,
Field Guide to
Emily.
The Times, yeah.
That was a great show. They should bring that back sometime.
They should. If anybody knows Reva, Emily, just drop that little seed in their ear.
Yeah, and all that's on SoundCloud, and most of it's on iTunes and stuff like that. We're on iTunes, if you want to look us up. That's at lexingtoncommunityradio.org and our SoundCloud page. Yeah, it's fun. Oh, we have the app. We keep forgetting we got to promote the app more.
That's true.
Yeah, if you go to the iTunes or Android store, that's there. So if you're listening, and we're kind of fading in and out, you're maybe on the edge of our range, yeah, go get the app and just listen to us on your phone or your computer.
True. So, Guy, kind of while we're wrapping up here, I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about the new Lexington Camera Club, since there's been this revitalization. When did that revitalization happen, and what's happening?
It was three or four years ago. Jim Birchfield, art historian, gave a talk at the Art Museum and about the old Camera Club. And it was a great talk with lots of photographs, you know, and great scholarship by Jim. And it was a good crowd. And afterwards, there were suddenly about 8 or 10 photographers in a knot saying, let's start this club up again. Yeah. And they asked me, and I said, well, I wasn't in charge, you know, and I don't want to be in charge. But we started meeting on the first Thursday of the month, like the old club did, for 2 hours, and just put up new work.
Cool.
And no rules, and except that, you know, don't put up too much work.
But,
it started just like in my dining room, and then we've been very fortunate to meet at UK SAVS, the School of Visual Arts, in some people's homes, too. Some of our members take us in. But it's been going several years, and we had a show at Georgetown College 2 years ago, year and a half ago. And we're about to, this coming October, we're going to have a show of new work at the Lyric Theater. Mm-hmm. And thanks to Donald Mason and others.
Shout out to the Lyric.
Yeah. It's in October 13th, Friday the 13th, I think it opens.
Nice. Dun, dun, dun.
And it's just, the title is New Work, but we have Paul Paletti, who is a photographer and a gallerist and a man in Louisville who helps run the Louisville Photo Biennial, which is this fall, and we'll be part of that. And he's jurying our show, and there's be 32 of us in the show, and we could have as many as 5 photographs apiece, so it could be a very big show, or you could winnow it down, so we'll see what happens, but And it'll be interesting to see the different kinds of work. We have people working in the old style, in, you know, in film. We have people working in, you know, very fancy digital, you know, with devices that, you know, cameras on poles and I don't know what all.
Have you messed around with a drone at all?
No, I haven't. And, you know, I always think, I'm not putting my camera on one of those things.
It's going to fly away with it.
I mean, my camera's heavy, and it's going to crash.
Certainly.
But I understand they come with cameras, right? And and what a vantage point, you know?
Yeah. Well, I've noticed, I think, just personal opinion, I think for still image, it works fantastic. For moving image, it's a little mechanical and a little inhuman. But I think if you need to be 30 feet tall for a shot to get the right angle on it.
Right.
It can be fantastic.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because we don't, we're not very tall.
So, Guy, who are some of the people who are in the new camera club? Or can anyone join, or is it invite only?
It's open. You know, there, like I said, there aren't any rules that we've had so far. It's people interested in photography and in experimenting with photography, with printmaking, you know, pushing the envelope, trying, looking for what's new, and cool. Trying to manifest it. So among the people that I don't have a list with me, but you know, Ruth Adams is involved. She runs the photo program at UK, and mm-hmm. she's a wonderful photographer. David Coyle, Frank Doring has been involved. Melissa Watt. Keep going, Guy.
There's a lot of folks.
Dobry Adams.
I understand.
Let's see. Who else was there last night? I don't have my list with
me. No, that's
if somebody wants to get involved, do you have maybe a Facebook or a website or something of that nature?
We're not that organized.
Oh, no. Yeah. So maybe how can
Thursday
you get in touch?
Of the month.
Where at?
Well, there is a listserv that Mick Jeffries is in charge of. And so if you know Mick, you could email him. He's another of the illustrious members. Marsha Hopkins. Robert Bruner has been a member. Once you come, you're always a member. So there's a couple of people who've left to go to California, like Nadezhda Nikolova and Carrie Goff. Mm-hmm. But I told them they can't get away from it. There, you know, we're always going to be hounding them. Yeah.
Once you're in, you're in.
That's right.
So, Guy, if people want to see your work, where can people go to check that out?
Well, it used to be the Ann Tower Gallery, and maybe still up for another few days as a show of Ann Tower Gallery artists that mm-hmm. I have two pictures in. But that's about to come down, and then the last show there is a show of, to complete the Bob Tharzing retrospective that's going on mm-hmm. now at the Loudoun House, that's Lexington Art League, and Institute 193. So there'll be a show opening soon of Tharzing's work at Ann Tower. And then Ann Tower Gallery goes dark, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But Institute 193 has been a wonderful institute, you know, a thing to have in our community. They really have promoted artists. And just recently at the Atlanta Contemporary Museum, there was a show of about eight of us from here: Robert Beatty, Mike Goodlett, Lina Tharzing, Charles Williams, and that show, Maya Ferrari, who's the director of Institute 193, she's hoping to expand that show and get it to a major museum. And it's a show of work from right around here and work of people who influence each other. Her title for it was Swimming the Way Home, something like that.
That's really nice. Uh-huh. And Guy, do you have a website that people can check out?
GuyMendez.com.
Nice. And that's Mendez.
M-E-N-D-E-S.
Excellent.
G-U-Y. Capital. Well, not capital on the website.
So, Guy, is there anything we missed or we didn't cover? Anything you'd like to talk about?
Oh, that people should contribute money to Lexington Community Radio and keep WLXU and W... What's the other
LXL
one?
Or El Pulso.
El Pulso? Okay, yeah.
95.7, our right. Spanish sister station.
Right. Two stations for the price of one.
That's true, I mean, yeah. So what can we say? For this time kidding. Only.
But if you got $25, you can send them. That'd be really helpful and, you know, keep the electricity flowing here. Mm. And, you know, this is a very important thing, Lexington Community Radio. And it's kin to WRFL. Mm-hmm. It's kin to the Colonel. It's, you know, where are you going to get your news if you think, you know, you're not getting the real story? How are you going to stay tuned? How are you going to find out what you need to be working for and what you need to be working against?
Absolutely.
And you got to put your ear to the ground. And in one place that's getting the message out is Lexington Community Radio.
We really appreciate that. Thank you so much, Guy.
Sure.
That's great. And, you know, we'll continue to do our best to capture the stories of our community and, you know, talk about things that are happening here in Lexington and Kentucky and beyond and stuff that really matters and how we can make a better world for everybody.
Amen.
Absolutely. Well, Guy, thank you so much for coming in. It was great to chat with you and hear and learn so much about Kentucky photography.
Jabber.
Lexington.
Yeah, it's our pleasure.
All right, y'all keep up the good work.
We'll do.
Thank you.
Who's coming up next, Chuck?
Up next is Scott White, who's the former chair of the Lexington Fayette County Board of Health. Well, nonetheless, we'll be back here in a little bit. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM Lexington Community Radio.